Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Welcome to another episode of the Talking Metal Podcast. Trying something a little different for this episode. Just straight talk, no music, no intros, no nothing, no sponsors. Of course, you know, we will take your PayPal donations at talkingmetal.com. We always like those. And also, of course, use the Amazon links in today's show notes to open up Amazon and you go make your purchases. We get a little money back on that. I'm in Central Park and a dog just nearly trampled me. Beautiful day here in Central Park. April 2014. On a lunch break from work, where I work at the Time Warner Center. Again, use that Amazon link to open up your Amazon. Make your purchases that you would be making anyways. And we get a little kickback on that. It's just one extra step. You just go to talkingmetal.com. You look in the show notes for today's episode. At the bottom of the show notes, you will see a little mention of the Amazon link. Click on that. It opens your Amazon. Your products and your purchases won't cost you anything more than they normally would. You're just making an extra step to support what I do here on Talking Metal. I guess the big news recently was Malcolm Young. It's been reported that he may have had a stroke, although that's all kind of hearsay. We didn't hear about him having a stroke officially. We have heard that he will be taking some time off, or maybe permanently taking a break from AC/DC. I don't know, but it's official he is taking a break from AC/DC. He is 61 years old, a little over 2 years older than Angus. And I believe, I'm not positive about this, but I believe he is the 7th of 8 children in the Young family. Angus is the youngest of 8. Their older brother's name was George Young, and he was very important in getting AC/DC going in the early days. So you really had not just Angus Young and Malcolm Young, who are such an important part of this band. You had George Young. Now, George had a song, I believe in the late 60s, with the Easy Beat. And the song was Friday on My Mind. Now, if you go Google that, and you hear the song Friday on My Mind, you will be, oh, yeah, that's, I know that song for sure. Big, big hit. Now, in that band, Easy Beat, George worked with a partner, a fellow band member, Harry Venda. Now, Harry and George, as a team, went on to become this songwriting producer team. And AC/DC is one of many bands that they worked with. Now, obviously, AC/DC featured George's two younger brothers, Malcolm and Angus. And it's even rumored that George helped with some of the guitars and bass on those early AC/DC records. And when I say early, I mean all those early records, right up until Highway to Hell, which, of course, Mutt Lang came in and produced that. So all that early stuff was heavily influenced or produced, I'm guessing it was heavily influenced, it's part speculation on my part, by older brother George, who had a big hit with this song, Friday on My Mind. Now, he and his partner, Harry, produced those early AC/DC records. They also worked with other artists. I think there was at least another one or two hit singles involved for them with pop artists and stuff like that in the 70s. So it wasn't AC/DC that they were working with exclusively or anything like that. And they were, yeah, this songwriting producer team. And again, producing those great AC/DC records. I mean, I just recently was listening to Let There Be Rock. And I mean, that song specifically, but the whole album, it's just so frickin' heavy. And the only way you get that heavy is just cranking the guitars up louder than everything else and having a sense of chaos going in the studio, or at least if there wasn't chaos in the studio, there was, they created a sound of chaos. I mean, it sounds like it's off the like the train is about to go off the rails at any point. Such a great record. I was really one of the first bands I got into post Kiss was AC/DC. They overlapped for a while because it's no secret that for me, when The Elder came out, I lost interest in Kiss for a number of years and kind of rejoined them with Lick It Up. But it's no secret that for, you know, and then I went back and I discovered The Elder and Creatures of the Night. But it's no secret that I, you know, as Kiss kind of fell out of favor in this country in the early 80s, probably like I would say 82 to 84, I wasn't really actively following Kiss, or even really a Kiss fan for that matter. I got into Styx right around the same time I got into Kiss, maybe a little after I got into Kiss. I was a big fan of them, and AC/DC then came along. Of course, Zeppelin, I was into Skynyrd. Those were all bands that kind of transitioned me, in a way, away from Kiss. April Wine I was into. But anyways, AC/DC was one of those big bands for me, and Let There Be Rock was one of the first records I got by them. Dirty Deeds was the first record I got. And then it was Let There Be Rock, Back in Black. Such great stuff. Those early AC/DC records, just so powerful and so potent. And George Young, again, their older brother, was just a big part of that, along with his partner, Harry Venda. And again, those two guys had a hit together with their band back in the 60s called Friday on My Mind. Again, Google that song. You'll definitely recognize that song. Now, it's interesting because a lot of people are, oh my God, Malcolm's out of the band. What are they going to do? You know, they're still going to continue. I mean, whether AC/DC should continue or not is a whole nother discussion. But they have done things without Malcolm before. Back in 1988, Stevie Young, who was their nephew, not the son of George, son of an older brother, I believe, Alex, who, and I believe Stevie Young isn't all that much younger than Malcolm and Angus. I might be wrong about that. I really have no idea. But I know he was playing guitar back in the 70s, so maybe he's 10 years younger than them. I don't know. But Stevie Young, back in 1988, toured with AC/DC when Malcolm was taking some time off to conquer some demons, reportedly alcoholism. And Stevie Young had toured with them on that tour, and a lot of the fans didn't even realize that there was a replacement in for Malcolm, because I guess he kind of really looked the part and looks similar to Malcolm. So will they get Stevie Young back in the band? I read he's still a musician, still plays, so that should be interesting to see if he comes back into the fold. I don't know. I mean, and again, back to my other question, should AC/DC continue as a band? I almost feel like maybe not, but it sounds like they still want to keep going. You know, it's, people have said it about Kiss. I actually have no problem with Kiss continuing. I know Eddie Trunk is critical of Paul Stanley's voice, saying he can't sing anymore. I think Paul can sing really pretty decently. Sure, you get the YouTube clips up there that aren't that great, but I think he still continues to do the job and put on a great show. You know, I recently saw this Aerosmith DVD that was recorded in Japan slightly after the earthquake and tsunami over there. And I thought I had to turn it off after a few songs. I thought they sounded incredibly sluggish. And it wasn't necessarily Steven Tyler. It was more the drums. I just thought it sounded real sluggish on that. I bought the Celebration Day DVD back in 2012 of that Led Zeppelin reunion, which happened, I think, back in, 2007, I'm thinking. And that was, I thought, really bad. I mean, it's like all these years I've always wanted a Led Zeppelin reunion, and I even questioned why, you know, there was big money on the table for those guys to get back together back in, I think, 2007, right after they had done that one reunion show. And after seeing the DVD and buying that DVD, I have to say, maybe it's better that they didn't get back together, because, I mean, let's face it, Page just doesn't really have it anymore. And, you know, Robert obviously doesn't have the range, which a lot of these guys don't, but the guitar playing just wasn't there, in my opinion. And I love Jimmy Page. He's the master. I mean, such a incredible, incredible figure in rock and rock history. And sometimes maybe it's best to leave that history untarnished. I mean, that's kind of where I've fallen after, for decades and decades, just wanting a Led Zeppelin reunion with Jason Bonham or whoever on drums. I almost feel like that Celebration DVD made me think that maybe, after all, you know, Plant's been the bad guy in this. People have said he's the guy who doesn't want the reunion. But maybe he understood this more than us fans did all along, that what they did in the 70s was so magical that, and late 60s for that matter, was so magical that when you get back together as older guys who don't play as well anymore, you risk tarnishing that legacy. Is that possible? Just throwing it out there. I don't know. So anyways, back to AC/DC. You know, they've continued to tour. I've been seeing them, I haven't seen them recently. I haven't seen them in 15 years, probably. But I saw them from, 85 is the first time I saw them, that was, the Fly on the Wall tour. And I saw them through, which was one of my all-time favorite shows out of hundreds and hundreds of shows that I've seen through the years. AC/DC doing Fly on the Wall is one of my favorite concert experiences ever. And I saw them again a couple years after that, and again a couple years after that, all the way up until probably 99. And they got progressively worse. They were never bad, but I just, Brian Johnson's voice, the energy level on stage, I always felt went down from show to show that I would see them play. And does that tarnish their legacy? I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. But, you know, it's a lot of these rock stars who die, Hendrix or whatever, even Kurt Cobain for that matter, Randy Rhoads, Dimebag, you could put in that bunch. It's like they a lot of them, it's you know, when they don't have the chance to grow old and give us shit records and low energy performances on stage, it really cements their legacy as being perfect or close to perfect. So, I don't know, just thinking out loud here. So guys, I want to thank you all personally for listening to this episode of Talking Metal, coming to you from Central Park. I'd like to end on just another couple notes here. Tawny Kitaen, I was hoping to connect with her at the Chiller Fest in New Jersey for an interview. Wouldn't it be great to interview Tawny Kitaen, former girlfriend of Robin Crosby, ex-wife of David Coverdale? But anyway, she appears to have canceled, so I don't even know if I'm going to go to Chiller now. Chiller Theater Festival happening this weekend in New Jersey. Speaking of Tawny Catane, kind of a segue to the 80s hits, Here I Go Again, which is a song that I just saw featured in Rock of Ages on Broadway. I saw it this past Friday. My wife and I had a dinner at B. Smith's on 46th Street. Then we went to 44th Street right by Times Square there to see Rock of Ages on Broadway. Here's my review. I didn't really like it. Somebody told me that the movie, it didn't work as a movie. A couple people actually said, oh, it didn't work as a movie, but it was great on the stage. So I saw it. I didn't think it was that good. I thought the cast was phenomenal. I thought everyone in the cast did a great job and really played the parts well. I thought the storyline was dull. The choice of music was okay. I mean, I didn't really have that big of issue with the way the music was performed. Like, I remember a long time ago when I saw Tommy performed on Broadway, I had the same problem Roger Daltrey had with it. You know, that was Pete Townsend's whole deal, getting that on Broadway. That it just didn't sound like rock. It didn't have the power that that Tommy did when The Who performed it, you know. But I didn't necessarily have that problem with Rock of Ages. I thought they did a pretty good job at having, you know, rock guitar players reproduce the sound and rock drummer and stuff. And even, you know, the singing, yeah, they're kind of a little Broadway sound to some of the singers. But in general, the cast was great. And that wasn't my issue. My issue was it's just kind of boring. You know, the story was incredibly weak. And I got bored pretty quick. The best part of the show for me was in the theater. Mark Weiss had all these pictures up of all these great shots of a lot of our favorite bands from the 80s that I'd never seen before. And it makes me want to go visit Mark Weiss's website to check out some of that stuff. Some great Lita Ford shots, Ozzy. There was a real cool Candid Axel shot from like the early, probably the early to mid 90s, which I thought was awesome, which I'd never seen. And it's kind of funny, Rock of Ages, the musical, at least I've never seen the movie, but the musical on Broadway, there's no Def Leppard music in it, which is kind of strange that they would choose to call it Rock of Ages and not have any Def Leppard music in it. You know, and somebody said to me, oh, maybe you were too close to the music and that's why you didn't like it. It's more for the casual. And no, that's not why I didn't like it. I thought the story was almost non-existent and weak and absolutely boring. So I don't recommend Rock of Ages on the stage. I've never seen the movie. Maybe the movie's better. People have told me it's not, though. So there you go. Currently reading Paul Stanley's book, about 70 pages in. Good so far. And it's funny, you know, Ace's book was kind of like, I felt like, you know, no regrets, a happy-go-lucky tale. Gene's book seemed upbeat for the most part. You know, a lot of it, he's responsible for everything. He's the greatest type of vibe in Gene's book. Peter's book was, you know, he felt cheated, the victim type of vibe in Peter's book, if you ask my couple word opinion of it. And Paul's book, pretty much what I would expect, a lot of, you know, feeling like the loner, feeling like the it was him against the world, a lot of complaining. I haven't even gotten to the Ace and Peter complaining yet, but just complaining about his parents and his upbringing. And listen, he did, I'm sure, have a tough upbringing. He was born with one ear. He's deaf on that side of his head. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, so far, 70 pages in, it's, I guess, what I would expect. And I feel each member, original member of that band, their books have kind of reflected their own personality, if you ask me. And which is kind of stupid for me to say, because they wrote the books, and what else would you expect? So we had a poll on our Facebook page, I asked people what their favorite Queensryche record was, and I gave them three options that they could choose from: Empire, Mind Crime, and Rage for Order. Now, why didn't I just ask them what their favorite Queensryche record was? I don't know. I just said, which one of these records is your favorite? Two people said Empire. I had, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 people said Mind Crime. Again, 2 said Empire, 22 said Mind Crime, 2 said Rage for Order, which is my favorite Queensryche record. And those were all the options. However, I had one person say Warning and one person say Promised Land. No one said the EP, which I still love that four-song EP, the original introduction to Queensryche. So there you go. Thanks for participating in that, guys. And I love reading all your comments. You can check us out on Facebook. We have two Facebook pages. There's the Talking Metal Facebook page and the Talking Metal Digital Facebook page. I've tried to combine the two, but Facebook declined that offer. I have no idea why. Fucking stupid. And what else? Check me out on one of my other shows. It's called One-on-One with Mitch Lafon. Been loving what Mitch mostly and what I've been helping him do with these podcasts so far. We play Mitch's interviews. Mitch and I talk rock and metal. It's a lot of fun. It's called One-on-One. You can find it in the new and noteworthy section currently on iTunes. And also, of course, on TalkingMetalDigital.com in the One-on-One section. We'll have it up on other platforms soon. It is on Spreaker. It is on Spreaker. All right, what else? I guess that's about it. Guys, thanks again for listening to me ramble here on Talking Metal. I always enjoy connecting and talking with you guys. Thanks for your support. Give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. The handle is Talking Metal. Later.